Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. This is a great day, man. I am so excited. We have a terrific panel here today, and they're all here, and they're in the studio, and I just couldn't be more excited because well, I'll get to the one panel member who we haven't seen in a really, really, really long time, so we're very happy that he's back. All right. First of all, let me welcome you to the program. It is 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this ninth day of June, and we welcome you to the program. If you would like to be a part of it, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We would love to hear from you. Let me introduce the group, and then we'll get started. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm great. I'm really happy.
Excellent. Good, good, good. We're very happy you're happy. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. This is a great day.
You have notes today.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
It's a shopping list.
Okay. I was like, wow, Rosemary has notes. She must be like ready.
No.
Ready to.
No,
all right.
I'm not.
Although
I am feeling overwhelmed. All of these loud, opinionated men and me.
You know, I was thinking.
Oh. Back to normal.
I was thinking there is a lot of testosterone in this room. I mean, 90% of it is Malcolm, but. But still, Malcolm Nance is here, counterterrorism expert and author. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. I'm glad to be in the studio.
Really glad to have you here. I actually had to do research for this. The last time this gentleman was on our program was August 23rd, 2020, and that was by telephone. We have not seen him in studio since February 14th, 2020, and it is a great pleasure to welcome back Rich Honan, corporate attorney to the stars, who is with us this morning. Rich, how are you?
I am great, and it's great to see everybody. Really nice.
We should note, and I just want to say this, we get notes all the time of people saying, well, where's Rich? And I think Rich will be the first one to tell you that we plead with him on a weekly basis to come on the show. And Rich has said pretty much since the beginning of the pandemic, when you all get back to the studio, I'll come back in. And
here we are.
And that was like the only rider you had to your faux contract. And so here you are. The day we started letting people in, we reached out to you, and here you are. So it's very good to have you. We missed you a lot. Is there anything we need to know? Any updates on your life?
Nope, exactly
the
same.
Any slimy companies you've helped to?
Well, as many as possible, right?
Where are the M&Ms from his rider?
Yes, cha-ching. I don't know, but there's boxes of Heineken on the lobby. What?
Oh, there it is.
Wow, no.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, good morning. Welcome to the program. It's a delight to have you all here. We are thrilled that you are with us, and let's get started on our ride this morning. Rosemary, do you see all the dog hair on my keyboard?
Yeah, I do.
Do you see that? So my dog got neutered yesterday.
Oh,
yeah,
this is
and
revenge?
Has a, no.
Setting
well, this is the you. but it had the cone on. So I was trying to. So I got down on the ground and was trying to like work on my script and pet the dog so it wouldn't go crazy. And I just realized when I opened up my computer that I can barely like it's just filled with dog hair. Anyway, so I guess if all I have to do is put up with a little dog hair, and my dog has to put up with having no testicles, it's probably a good day.
Interesting intro.
Okay.
Very interesting intro, yeah.
And a good trade.
Well, that's my point, right? Good trade, exactly. I'm still fighting to get online here, so I apologize for my momentary stalling. Yes, I have to go to an alternate mode. Alan, you have anything to tell us? Anything interesting? Anything? You can give me a minute here while I... Alan, are you still there?
Oh, your show's falling
yes,
apart.
Yes,
oh, there
here.
You Okay, good, good, good,
I
good.
I can always fill a minute. Now a half a minute. Now a quarter of a minute. Now none of a minute.
No, still filling.
Not, you, Joe.
Not even close.
Yeah, what's the first subject?
Okay, I'm getting to the first subject. I swear to you, I'm getting to the first subject. Wow, this is so weird. I'm not Okay.
I really thought you guys would be better prepared.
Oh, no, we're not at all.
After a year?
It's really bad.
Are you
crazy? Well, when I came in, I logged in and I was online, and now I'm not. So I'm just trying to figure that out. Anyway, the infrastructure talks collapse. That's the big story that we want to talk about. It would be great if I could have remembered that for 4 seconds, but I couldn't. White House infrastructure talks with the Capitol collapse. Or as it says here in the Washington Post headline, Capito. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Collapse leading to finger-pointing as Biden shifts strategy. President Biden ended negotiations with a group of Republicans led by Senator Shelley Moore Capito, the Republican from West Virginia, over his infrastructure package Tuesday as the two sides failed to strike a deal after weeks of talks. Alan, what happened? What can happen now?
The way I see it is this, and I've said this before. Look, Trump has put out the word there will be no cooperation with this administration whatsoever. None. We don't want it. And anybody who does it, the theory is, faces, what the dog faced.
Yes.
So,
a neutering, if you will.
Yeah.
That's already finished.
So if you look at it that way, anybody who strays from the land of no, N-O, is going to be punished. And they all know it, and they'll talk to others about it. I've been talking to people on Congressional Corner. They'll say they've been told by people that they will lose their offices if they cooperate in any way. So it was folly to believe that there was going to be any cooperation with the Democrats on this at all. Even though a lot of people would benefit from it. And so there's no surprise here for me.
Rich Honan, what say you?
Well, I'm at more of a disadvantage than usual because I, like a lot of other people of my ilk, right around October or November of last year, kind of stopped following the news. And so until Sarah reached out to me.
Which, by the way, is what we look for in a panelist.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So when Sarah reached out, I started rereading, kind of rereading the papers again, which was a weird experience. So
Trump lost. Did you get that?
I heard that part.
I'm sure.
And the so I'm not as up on the politics. I'm more up on the policy. And the policy part of it, I'll defer to you guys on the politics. The policy part of it is, it certainly would be hypocritical for Republicans to be against, quote, infrastructure now if they were in favor of it, before. And I think everybody was. It sounds to me like the sticking point is, like most bills, there's things in there that people are arguably saying are not part of the bill. There seems to be a portion of it that Republicans are saying is not infrastructure, is other initiatives, which may, by the way, be laudable initiatives. It's just, I think to put that under the infrastructure, I think, plus you're right. I mean, they're always going to, if he says yes, they're going to say no. The other thing I would say, and I don't think the debate has reached this level of intellectualism, but you kind of wonder if the concept of infrastructure, which started in the Trump years, has changed post-COVID, so that maybe if you're like maybe actual physical infrastructure, roads, bridges, while still important, maybe there needs to be a reallocation of that now that large amounts of people might be working from home and things like that.
You're absolutely right. I think there has been a change in what infrastructure means since the Trump period. See, because under Trump, infrastructure meant building bridges to his hotels. It meant that money had to go into the pockets of his friends. I mean, everything he proposed was a money-making scheme for himself, his family, or his peers. Right now, we are in a circumstance where the United States' critical infrastructure has shown flaws that have contributed to the deaths of 600,000 people. The elderly had no resources and no backup, no government support, to the point where they became these flaming fire pits of death because we didn't give one lick about them. I mean, it's a shame we didn't.
You're so bland.
No, I know. First thing in the morning. But it's a shame that, we have to worry about this. There was a veterans hospital in Massachusetts that practically killed every person in it. So, maybe that's a little hyperbole. But we lost a lot of people. Here's what bugs me the most. Republicans don't care that we lost a lot of people. They say, oh, well, let's fix up a couple of bridges. These bridges have been behind since the 1970s. Now is the time to get it done. We have found out that critical infrastructure were the people who would actually bring food to you to those critical aid workers who had to go to a hospital or mop the floors of the hospitals. We found out that doctors and nurses didn't have any of the network structure beyond the basics to handle another pandemic. That's critical infrastructure. So long as Republicans constantly think if it's just not a fluff highway in my town, then we're not going to support it. I had a piece of critical infrastructure come into my village in Columbia County. And my neighbors, who are all Republican, all hardcore right-wingers, fought it tooth and nail. And that was the Hudson-Albany Electric Trail, which was a trail that, during a global pandemic, was the only place that you could walk and exercise in Columbia County. It was a gift. It was a godsend. And I literally had a mayor tell me that this will bring more liberals in. No, it raises your housing values.
No.
But more importantly, you won't die in your house if you could get out and do some exercise. I thank God that was prioritized as an jobs infrastructure bill.
Those rail trails are great, by the way. I do have to say, the one, like the rail trail, the Voorheesville, Delmar, Bethlehem, the amount of people you saw on there throughout the pandemic, and even now, just people of all stripes and just, walking, running, dogs, the whole thing.
Sure you're Republican?
Okay.
Do you have anything to say?
I'm a conservative.
I have a couple things to say. I'm disgusted, as usual, with the Democrats who are not playing the game right. Joe's taken a very hard stand trying to educate Americans on what infrastructure means. It's more than roads and bridges, as Malcolm just elucidated. But does he have the votes to do it? No one has figured out Joe Manchin, who is just running roughshod with all the power he has. Schumer hasn't figured out. You bribe, cajole, whatever McConnell does to his people, how come the Democrats aren't doing the Manchin and Sinema to get them in line? So if he's taking a hard stand, does he mean he has them in line? I don't think he does. So that worries me, and that means he's left with nothing. And as J.P. Miller talked about yesterday, he badly needs something else besides COVID as a win. And infrastructure seems like the obvious thing. And if he has to break it into smaller packages, do roads and bridges. We all agree on that. Even if we're working at home, we still need roads and bridges that have been falling into shambles for decades now. They need to be fixed. So put the money into that. Start with that. The other thing is that there is room for Democrats to negotiate. And I'm not hearing them giving away, too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in that bill that really does have nothing to do with infrastructure. Daycare, come on. I'm in favor of daycare. That's not infrastructure.
$1.9 trillion to get down to 1.2.
Well, I still think there's a ways to go. And the other thing is, what is wrong? What is wrong with taking money that went into the COVID relief bill and moving it into this? That money is unspent or badly spent, as we're increasingly learning. So why not move it into infrastructure, which is COVID relief as well? I don't get why that's a big sticking point. The tax, the corporate tax bill, we could easily go up. There's room for negotiation there. The Republican bill that Trump got through went way below what even companies were asking for, the greedy companies. They would take an increase less than what we were originally, and it would give it extra money. And the ProPublica article that just comes out shows that there are individuals who are not paying their fair share. They are billionaires like Musk, Elon Musk, and Bezos are paying a 3.2% income tax. Come on, guys. Get going after the IRS. So there's a lot that can be done. I don't see Schumer pushing it. Schumer is not Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. I was going to ask you guys about
just
that.
Just awful.
Is it? Okay. I was wondering what your perspective on that is.
Do any of you hear from him?
No.
Occasionally, once a week, he might make a statement. We don't see any
Alan talked to him for 2 days yesterday.
3 days.
3 days.
Oh, 2 days, you're
2 days,
right. Yeah, 2 days, you're right.
Yeah, you know,
it felt like
would
days.
He like to share it with the rest of America? Or the Democratic Party? We need a fighter in there right now. A fighter who will say, oh, you want a filibuster? filibuster, get up there and talk, and then collapse. And then, you know, we still have the 60-vote threshold.
Which, by the way, Manchin did suggest. Manchin is not being listened to on his good points. He actually does have a solution for the voter reform bill. He does have a solution on filibuster. And instead, we're just saying, oh, Manchin throwing up our hands. He, listen to him. He's the way to bipartisanship.
Who would you have?
Snuff him out.
Realistically, if it wasn't Schumer, who would it be?
Wait, in the Senate?
Yeah, as majority leader.
Oh. At this point, I'd take
Whitehouse from Rhode Island. I would take
Sheldon Whitehouse. I mean, there's a few options out there. I'd actually choose a junior senator, Senator Kelly, Navy pilot, experimental space shuttle flyer, International Space Station. If you can manually manipulate a multi-near trillion-dollar facility under your fingertips,
not a lot of us have that on our resume.
I'm just saying, hey, astronaut, win.
Alan, got a minute? What do you think?
I don't think much.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if you wanted to get in on that sort of on defending Chuck.
No, Chuck, I have said way before we heard this discussion that Chuck needed to be more brazen and more leader-like in his position. I've said it again and again, and I heard from his people who didn't like it. Maybe that's why he comes on. I don't know. He came on before that. It is not in his character to be that way. Nancy Pelosi has it, and she also, by the way, has a majority as opposed to, you know, opposed to what we have here in the Senate with 50-50. But I wish he was a little bit more, you know, out front.
Pelosi had it when she was in the minority and she wasn't the speaker. She was a minority leader and she still stood up for democratic values against Trump. Schumer has never done that. Oh, I like what he did in Jerusalem. That's great.
No. I don't think that's fair.
Discussed it with him.
Okay.
Discussed
well, you know what? I'll tell you very quickly.
I don't think that's fair.
You got a 30-second warning.
While the Republicans are in line, they are mortally terrified, not just of losing their jobs, losing their lives. The Republican base is extremely violent. I just finished a 120,000 word book on that. And they are really afraid for their families, for those who want to be moderate. The rest of them just love it. They can be indecent now.
We're going to take a break. We'll try to bring down the one eyebrow that went up on Rich's head when Malcolm said that. We'll do that during the break and we'll discuss it when we come back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I kept on saying during the break, please save it for the show. Please save it for the show. And they didn't. They just kept on going.
Now we're back to your dog.
Rosemary was the only one who was nice enough to. All right. Anyway, well I was rolling
my eyes.
All right. A couple things. First of all, I have we want to read the rules about emails because every once in a while we fall into bad habits. Again, I know, and we have to. We haven't done it for a couple days, and people forget, and then the emails get a little sloppy, and we just have to remind you. That's all. So if you're new to this proceeding, or if you'd like to, and if you've done it before, and perhaps have forgotten the rules, here we go. Please keep them short and to the point, and for God's sakes, on topic. Don't include links or attachments. People like want us to read articles during the show. We don't do that. We can't do that. So please don't do it. And also, don't use abbreviations and proofread your emails before you send. That way we'll know what you actually mean to say. And I think that is, those are the big rules. So now we'll get to all the mail for the people who actually follow those rules, and we appreciate them very much. Vincent said Schumer was on the radio yesterday with Alan, and Schumer was not put on the spot for how to deal with Manchin and Sinema. His feet need to be put to the fire. Two pseudo-Democrats cannot hold up legislation for the whole of America, and it's time for federal agencies to crack down on violent right-wing groups. Alan, I'll let you respond to that.
Well, you got a 50. First of all, I think I talked to him about it the time before, not yesterday, but the day before. But I wouldn't want to swear to it. I think I did. However, he's got a 50-50 split in the Senate. If he loses Manchin, who is holding on for dear life, and if the same kind of split keeps occurring, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, is it better to yell at him and force him out than to keep him there under his terms. I don't like it any more than anybody else does, but he's doing it. And the Democrats are in a very bad place between a hard place between a rock and something else. So therefore, people are furious at Manchin. I get that. But they have to project themselves into his situation to understand what's really going on.
I'm not furious at Manchin. I think he has some really good ideas and needs to be listened to. And he needs to be handled. He is not being handled. Either you listen to his ideas and bring him into the fold to, so that those ideas are adopted and he goes along with it, or you bribe him with stuff he wants in West Virginia, or you squish him the way that McConnell squishes his people. Schumer's not doing any of those things.
Well, how
we're
do you
all
know
just
that,
throwing
though?
Up our hands.
But you don't
because
know that.
Because he continues to do it in one bill after another.
But you
Rich.
Don't know that, and I don't know why I'm defending Chuck Schumer. But
me neither.
No, I'm just saying it's possible, especially given what you're saying about Schumer's personality. He's not somebody who's going to publicly go out and cut somebody's head off, even though that might be what's needed from time to time. Isn't it possible they're having some type of discussions?
I mean, isn't working.
Okay.
He was on an editorial this past weekend talking about how the voting reform bill is bipartisan. Doesn't explain how it's bipartisan, simply that Republicans don't like it. That makes it a non-bipartisan bill.
Meaning Manchin wrote
the editorial. Sorry, partisan, I'm saying.
Yeah, but Manchin wrote the editorial.
Yeah.
All right. This for Rosemary from Jim. Where have you been for the last, 100 years? Childcare isn't infrastructure any more than for a bridge or tunnel isn't defense spending. Tucking other stuff into bills has been the way politicians operate for decades.
Right.
Democrats shouldn't even think of doing that, but Republicans will do that as soon as they can.
Isn't that what I said? I think that I love daycare. We certainly need more of it in the country, but trying to get it through tucked into an infrastructure bill endangers infrastructure and will not get daycare.
Yeah. You know what I think? I suspect what happened was that the Biden approach to this was to load everything and the kitchen sink into that, knowing full well, because he said the first day, I'm willing to compromise. And the idea was that the bill was so junked up, he would take all kinds of stuff out, and he did. And you know what? They didn't care. No matter what he offered, they're mm-hmm. still scared to death of Trump, and that's the way it is. There's no compromise.
Can I make a quick point? I know we just got off Manchin, but let me get back on him really, really quick. Manchin, here's what I don't understand about him. He will never again be reelected in West Virginia. The Republican base there and the people that supported him before are rabid. I mean, these are people, if you do not show absolute unwavering fealty to Trump, they will not even support you. The Democrats there are frustrated. And there's this poll that came out that showed that in West Virginia, 64% of West Virginians, which includes Republicans, supported the COVID relief bill. 68% support the infrastructure plan as it's proposed right now. And 79% of all West Virginians. That means that 25% of Republicans or more support the Voting Rights Act, the For the People Act. And Manchin's going on like, oh, well, I'm going to get voted out. If he were to convert to Republican today and flip the Senate, they would personally ensure he never goes back in the Senate. They would engineer a way for him to be kicked out, and they would put in a rabid QAnon pro-Trumper. They don't care about the politics of this thing that Joe Manchin cares about. Joe Manchin is wildly out of step with West Virginia.
I don't know what QAnon is.
Oh, well, you don't want to know. Okay. So you've really been out of it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It's the crazy right-wing cult that's taken over the Republican Party that says all liberal Democrats must be genocided because they are satanic child-killing baby eaters.
I guess I wasn't on that group
crazy.
Text.
I mean, and I wish I was saying he was, like, you know,
he didn't over-hyping
it, but he's not really exaggerating it. No, that's sort of in the handbook.
And it is now the Republican Party platform.
What is the
letter Q.
What is the? Do we know if I was thinking about this as Senator Capito was sitting with the president yesterday, of what her popularity is in the state of West Virginia versus that of her counterpart in Manchin.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting. Of course, a Republican, one a Democrat. All right, back to the letters. We go, and I think we have one. Oh, I had it up here. It was for Malcolm.
Oh.
I thought it was for Malcolm. Could Malcolm name one infrastructure item that, quote, repaired a bridge to Trump's hotel? The rail trail in Columbia County under Trump did not lead to a hotel, if I'm not mistaken. Skip the hyperbole and stick to the facts, please.
The rail trail in Columbia County was not funded under Trump. It was funded under Obama in New York State. Yeah, that was a little bit of hyperbole. But we also know that the same infrastructure, that same organization is now under criminal investigation. Oh, wait. Perhaps yeah, I can point one out. How about the Trump Hotel in downtown D.C., which took COVID relief funds and other government funds?
Yeah, I was
that
thinking
personally
of that one too.
Went to his pocket. And if I were to go around Bedford Golf Course in New Jersey and start looking for the money, I'm pretty sure I can find something. It's not hyperbole. They run a continuous criminal enterprise that's being investigated by multiple states now.
Russ writes, the unbridgeable gap between Biden and the Republicans was not so much the definition of infrastructure, but financing. The line in the sand was a Republican refusal to consider any new tax revenue. All further consideration will depend entirely on the midterms. Anything on that, Rich?
What's the argument against using the COVID funds?
There isn't one, to my view. I think you could easily move the money over. As I say, it hasn't all been spent. But Biden is saying we need more. We have to, now's the time to put into place.
The Republican argument is only use those funds.
Right, exactly.
And nothing else.
Yeah,
don't allocate any other government monies.
But you can see that's a position that can be negotiated. You're saying none. We're saying some. Let's move together.
Use them first and then have caps and stuff like that.
No, yeah. I mean, it's literally pandering to the base, the crazy QAnon base, that there is something always wrong with COVID. It was a hoax. And let's take that money back and now put that towards infrastructure. Look, this is going to be a lot more than anything we allocated towards COVID if you want to really fix American infrastructure.
Well, I think the real key is getting back money from the rich are not paying their share. That's
Absolutely.
Becoming increasingly obvious. Sorry, Mr. Corporate Lawyer, but it's true. And that's
I just miss hearing the old tropes.
Too.
I never get to hear this sitting around my house.
They're not tropes when nobody's paying taxes but us. I'm paying
3.2%. Elon Musk is paying 3.2%.
Hey, I'm paying 46%.
I just want to cheat on my taxes hearing that.
All right.
You can because there's no IRS enforcement organization now. Trump gutted it.
Elon is making the world safe for electric cars, though.
No, he's going to blow it all on Bitcoin.
I want to talk about...
Can I just ask, why do we even have Bitcoin? Seriously.
Oh, we had this discussion.
Oh,
the UK made it part of...
This is the bad part about not being in touch.
No. I didn't mean that as a... I'm just saying that we didn't talk about that.
All right.
But that particular aspect. But it's interesting that Bitcoin has come up again. You were going to say...
Well, I think it's the UK just made it official currency, the first government to do so.
While you were sleeping.
Who uses that other than terrorists and kidnappers?
It's an imaginary money.
Yeah. I mean, actually, all money's imaginary, but that's really imaginary.
There's nothing backing it.
I would love to talk about Jeff Bezos going to space, but we have other things to talk about. Okay. So
he's got too much money. Wow.
Barbara says, I'm still listening and learning. Thank you. However, there are several problems or flaws with the voting reform bill that have not been fully covered or explained. But ask Manchin and others to make it better instead of shouting and running around makes me think that no one wants to get anything done. They just want to look like they're working on it.
No, this is an existential threat to democracy this year. You know, the funny thing is I wrote this book, which I started last August, about the coming insurgency that we're having, which is a political and paramilitary insurgency amongst the Trump people, which manifested itself 60 days after the book was sold. Over the last 6 months, I have become even more terrified than during the pre-election period. What we have now is the entirety of Republican base, the state parties, have decided they will just dismantle democracy. The way you do it, and this was an old communist trope, you know how you get rid of democracy? You vote it out. You have an election, and then you make sure there are no more elections. And you can say you have the will of the people. Mm. By getting rid early voting, getting rid of all ballot boxes in minority areas, saying that you have to personally request these things, having voter ID, you know, which targets university students specifically, and minorities and elderly that don't vote within that block, and in 37 states, maybe to pass that simply because Donald Trump said is a pathological liar who said he won the election by 10 million votes and that he's actually president of the United States. That is unhinged from reality. And he has bought every one of the Republican Party base and politicians in every state all said, yeah, you know, that's right. So let's just dismantle this. The Voting Rights Act is the last thing standing between us and a free and fair election in the future. They will just say, we won't certify any more presidential elections if you win. And they have said that they would do that, yeah. that a Republican House will never again certify a Democratic president, and they will essentially push us hardcore into dictatorship, like they tried to do on January 6th, mm-hmm. when they intended to overthrow government to keep Donald Trump in power.
Alan?
Exactly right. Malcolm, I have a very important question for you. What is the name of your book?
It'll be forthcoming here. It's turned in. It's called They Want to Kill Americans, the Armed Militias, Fanatic Terrorist, and Deranged Ideology of the Coming Trump Insurgency. And the problem is,
I'm not going to be able to fit all that in.
I know, but the problem is the insurgency is not coming anymore. It's here. There is a political and paramilitary insurgency that has already arrived.
Are you sure the title isn't a tad too subtle?
On that note, we'll take a break. Go ahead, Al.
It ain't that funny.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters on this subject, on infrastructure and Manchin and other stuff. We'll get to those when we come back. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Man, do we have a lot of letters. And weirdly, they're not all to Rich. So that's good. I like that. Okay, here we go. From John, if you want to know how bad the threat of right-wing violence is, ask us LGBTQ plus people. A trans person, especially black trans women, is murdered for being trans every 2 weeks. And those are only the ones where being trans is the only clear reason. Many more are categorized as other crimes. The rest of us under LGBTQ plus letters, while not to the same extreme, are also seeing an increase in homophobia against us. That from John. Also, we go to this letter from Julius. Hey, folks, Elon is not making safe electric cars. The software that controls those cars is open to easy hacking. We should be demanding, I think that was a joke that you made earlier, but that's all right. We should be demanding that electric cars, for that matter, all cars use proven, unhackable, bug-free operating systems that are available today. Oh, go ahead. Hold on. We need Rich's mic on. I don't know. Did Rich? Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, that was my bad.
Okay.
That was not a left-wing conspiracy to shut me out. I was going to say that...
You don't know that.
Yes, it was.
Tifa strikes again.
That hacking segues nicely into whatever our next the story on the China bill. And because one of my questions would be, who's doing that hacking and what are we doing about it,
yeah,
if it's happening?
All right, we go to...
And we have to get time to badmouth Merrick Garland, too.
Okay. I promise. Bobby says, just tuning decisions. In, great to hear Rich is back, but I'm sorry he doesn't know what QAnon is. What does he think happened on January 6th?
Just a normal tourist day?
Am I supposed to respond?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can respond. A huge grin.
No, I'm not grinning. I'm just saying that, we've been saying for years that there are terrorist groups out there that need to be dealt with, and I don't care which side they're on. I think if they're violent, they should be dealt with. And I think part of what we've been doing as a culture is sometimes excusing violence or saying, yes, I know that was bad, but it was in service of this. And I think we're reaping some of the detriments of that.
So, Rich, not to interfere too much in this, is this a bit of false equivalency on your part? In other words, the implication of what you said is that these terrorist groups, unlike QAnon, are all around on the left and the right. Is that what you're saying?
Or to paraphrase, there are good people on both sides.
No. I'm not even going to get into that. Okay, we'll get past that. read that statement one day.
Yeah. I have read it, and I heard him make it.
Yeah. I'm going to stand up for Rich here, because early on when I said that he was grinning, he wasn't grinning. He just had this look of bliss on his face. Because as he's told us, he hasn't really been keeping up on this stuff. And, you know, you look like you just emerged from an ashram for the last 6 months, and that, you know, you had found yourself. And that the world really doesn't matter. And for a second there, I was very jealous.
I'll tell you, it's a very weird experience going, especially if you're a news junkie like a lot of us and like I was, to go from being immersed, you know, to being, you know, totally unimmersed. And a couple of things that were really striking, I'll just say, one of the things was, and not political, but like when I stopped following the news, everybody on the right was in favor of the vaccine, and everybody on the left was suspicious of it. And then when I picked up the news again, everybody on the right became suspicious of the vaccine, and everybody on the left was in favor of it.
That's true.
It was striking.
We've commented about that. What is the anti-vaxxer, anti-maskers position on? It has nothing to do. Trump promotes that. Thank me for this.
But it was just a full one. It was almost like when you're binge watching on Netflix, you know, and you're watching like BoJack or something, and you fall asleep, and then like a couple of episodes later, you're like, wait a minute. Did Diane marry Mr. Peanut Butter?
You know, like when you're watching BoJack on Netflix.
There you go.
It's an Adult Swim reference. Rick says, what is each of your ideas for the best way to get Manchin to fall into line in realistic terms? Alan, do you want to take that first?
Well, I don't know what there is, to be honest with you. I think this is a tough one. If I'm the president of the United States, I could legally bribe him. I could tell him what he could have if he decides he doesn't want to be in the Senate anymore. But if I tell him what he doesn't want to, if he gets unelected to the Senate, we could be in real bad shape, he is saying to himself. So it's a tough road. I don't know what to do. Rosemary, what do you think they could do?
I think it's a combination of things. I think McConnell would know how to deal with this, which is talking to him, bringing him into the leadership structure, because he certainly has the power enough. Why not use it? Bribery, because West Virginia is sorely in need of infrastructure, and the jobs that an infrastructure bill would bring. So how could you not use that? As I've said repeatedly, his ideas on that voter bill that he is dead set against are good ones, and no one on either side listened to him. I don't get that. So I think Manchin needs to stop vilifying him. Bipartisanship is what the whole country wants. Start listening to him and working with him.
Let me go back to letters.
Wait, I've got something to say.
All right,
that.
I'm sorry, Malcolm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I think Rosemary's right partially. I really do think that it's time to go back to the old school bribing through earmarking of senators. Yeah. West Virginia, I've been there. You know, the only thing I really did when I was there was go to a long range shooting school in a beautiful part of the country that surprisingly has a large number of blacks. But what I would do is I would decide West Virginia is going to be the hub between the modern world and the oldie-timey world. And Defense Department, defense computer hubs in West Virginia, the way NASA has their new space calculation center there. New highways in and out of that place. Decide that it's going to be the global industry hub for wind power and solar power for the United States, and say what Shanghai is to China, we're going to do that to West Virginia, the whole state. And then, you know, lots of liberals will move in there and buy all those cute houses, and then they'll flip the state to Democrat. But you're going to have to throw money at this problem, and there's no state that really needs it more that could be as helpful as West Virginia.
Exactly.
Yeah, it seems like such an simple issue. It seems like an issue that leaders have to deal with every day. I mean, it's an issue that we all have to deal with, certainly in my job and everybody
Absolutely.
At work. You know, you're always trying to persuade, you know, people over, you know, to be able to get something across the finish line, whether it's a corporate deal or a political deal or, you know, things in relationships or whatever, right? And it just it almost seems like Schumer just, or the people who can't do it are people who just don't have the experience with having to convince people in an intellectual way to be on their side.
I mean, emancipation held was gotten through by offering to be a postmaster general. So yeah. I'm game.
Get that book for managers.
I don't think it was even
managers.
General. I think it was just postmaster right. of some area. Yeah. You know,
get that book for corporate managers on how to deal with difficult personalities. I don't think Schumer's ever read that. He just throws up his hand. It's like Manchin is his excuse for failure.
Alan,
you know, we are talking about all the things that an intellectual West Virginian, and I think there are such people. Would go for and make Manchin safer, but I think there's an ethos, if that's the right word, in West Virginia, which is Trump good, despite the fact that you were correct in when you guys were talking before about all the things that West Virginians wanted that were being espoused by the current president. There is still this ethos, this Trump good, everybody else bad, despite the specific things that we could get, we West Virginians could get. And that's what I worry about. I worry about how you get over that hump.
You know, I think, first off, ethos is the wrong word because that requires some form of ethics. I think mantra, cult-like dogma out there is that. It reminds me of an article that I read about West Virginia, where they were going around with a Obamacare enroller, and before the election, just after the election of Trump, and this one was an Obamacare enroller. Her job was to get people on it, and they met this guy who got new teeth. He said he was in the Black Lung Program. The first time he ever had health care, and he was like, "I'm all Trump." And the woman who was the enroller was for Trump. And the journalist said, "Are you aware that they're about to cut your entire program here? You are going to lose your job." And she said, "Trump will take care of it." Nothing got taken care of.
Well, I think that...
Exactly.
Oh, are we out of time?
We are out of time, but go ahead. Why don't you make your point?
I was going to say, I think the mantra that you guys are getting stuck on is every time you say that Manchin or someone is listening to Trump, I think you're failing to differentiate between Trump and some of the principles that his followers liked, not putting aside the rhetoric, putting aside the a-holeness, until you break that linkage, you can't have that conversation. That's one of the reasons why Schumer can't talk to Manchin, because he thinks he's going against Trump. And Manchin is, in his mind, is defending principles that some of which were espoused by Trump, but others of which were espoused by his population.
Yeah. So I see that point. I think Manchin is not a Trumper. He is.
Oh, he's not.
He deeply believes what he's arguing, and he is a man of principle.
Yeah. And the fact that Trump might have enunciated some of those positions, you know, in however a manner, you know, shouldn't derogate those positions.
We should point out, or I want to point out, that on November 3rd, 2020, in the state of West Virginia, Donald Trump won with 68.6% of the vote to Joe Biden's 29.6%. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Well,
we
life is getting back to normal. Rich is dancing in the studio. So
that was good music. Yeah, who was that?
Makes me want to have a pack of cools.
All good stuff.
I don't smoke.
Yeah, you roll up.
Roving your T-shirt sleeve. Yeah. All right. We have a lot of letters, so I'm going to roll through them pretty quick. If anybody wants to jump in and say anything about them or comment on them or answer them directly, please do. Otherwise, I'll just keep rolling. We go to Eric. I agree with the majority of the panel in that Senator Schumer is largely ineffective as leader. How is a majority leader identified and selected? Is there prestige involved, populism, experience, or veteran status? I feel I may be going out on a limb by suggesting this individual, but I feel as if Senator Swalwell would be an energetic and effective option. Anyways, great discussion this morning. Swalwell?
Eric
Swalwell? He's not a senator.
He's not a senator, though.
He's a representative. Yeah.
The congressman?
So he's out.
Okay, so that would
and
not
by the
work.
Way, even if he was a senator, he'd still be out.
Still in for the astronaut.
Right. There is an answer here, and that is it's called democracy. People from the people who sit in the Senate, they have to decide who's their leader going to be. There's no prescribed way of doing it. You can be, you can't be. You know, Chuck worked very hard on it. I remember the night he came to visit me when I was on Channel 13, and he took me to dinner afterwards, and he said, I'm going to beat the motto. And I said, no, you're not. And he said, yes, I am. And he did. And he knew exactly what he was doing, and he did the same thing in getting to be leader in the Senate.
Let's go to Pete, who writes, if nothing else, send the media into West Virginia and have them create a list of all the possible infrastructure that are in jeopardy of failure, the lack of jobs, the drug issue, the limited future of the young adults. Then we go to another Manchin letter, change the term for modern Jim Crow to the Jim Manchin era. Maybe if he thinks his name will forever be associated with racism, he will be shamed to do the right thing. Warr says Biden needs to find something to give Sinema and Manchin. Hold your nose and give them something. Republicans have no intention to work with Democrats ever. If Manchin and Sinema are holding out, find out what they want slash need and just give it to them for the love of democracy. Hopefully they'll get their just desserts in the long run.
Well, they want to be reelected. It's that simple. And they think they've made the decision that in those certainly, West Virginia, probably Arizona or whatever, they've decided that that's the way to do it, period. That's the end of the story.
Let's see. Another Joe writes, thank you, Malcolm, for pointing out that most West Virginians want the bills that Manchin says his people don't want. Why does he keep getting softball questions? He should be asked why he is opposing bills that he co-sponsored. Mary says, trace the connections between Manchin and the Koch brothers, especially on voting rights. Then Lucian says, why has Trump gotten away with so much? Why hasn't he been arrested? This time in our history, if we survive, we'll be looked back at an absolute wonder, says Lucian. Then there is John. The London, Ontario slaughter reminds us of the present threat by racist, hate-inspired people. Malcolm just mentioned the embrace of violence and anti-government acts by the Republican base. Are the right-wing domestic violent extremist DVEs in a regroup, re-strategized mode, and are security forces ready to risk bad Fox News optics to neutralize these DVE networks?
Well, we do have a problem with domestic violent extremists, is what the new euphemism for what we call the right-wing extremism. But, you know, not everybody who's an extremist is a terrorist. And we really have to prioritize our law enforcement and counterterrorism to going after people who are about to do things. And case in point, there was a plot that was exposed. Oh, I can't where it was fails me. But the FBI, about 4 or 5 months ago, actually had a guy who wanted to build a car bomb. Oh, I'm sorry. It was the Bank First attack or thwarted attack in Oklahoma City. Uh-huh. There's a rule in counterterrorism. If you think you're talking to a terrorist group, you're talking to the FBI. Really, you are. The FBI, this guy came out there. He's trying to buy explosives. They offered him a truck bomb. He accepted it. He actually had the bomb positioned near the Bank First building in Oklahoma City. He said he wanted to outdo Timothy McVeigh. They handed him a cell phone, which he kept pressing to try to detonate the fake bomb filled with clay and not with real plastic explosives. Nice. That occurred this year. There are other incidents that are happening left and right. There is an uprising in this country where they want to collapse the democratic order because Donald Trump has told them that there is no democratic order. These people will believe Russian propaganda before they will believe anyone who is what they call liberal Democrat. And in their mind, that's anyone who does not support Donald Trump. I was conservative most of my life. You know, I was a Colin Powell-style conservative, hard on national security, liberal on social issues. We're hardcore far to the left, according to these people. We're pushing the left wall. So to them, they don't care about us. They don't view us as human. And that's why the QAnon thing swung. Tens of millions of Americans believe QAnon ideology. And that ideology is liberals and Democrats are all evil, child-killing, kidnapping, baby traffickers. And the lead person in the Capitol was a QAnon person thinking this was, quote, the storm, the day that Donald Trump would use the armed forces of the United States to slaughter hundreds of thousands of Americans. That's what they believe.
All right, I want to do just a couple more letters here, then we're going to move on to another topic. The interstate road system, writes Chris, was pushed through with the idea that it would help with defense by allowing military quicker movement of defense forces from anywhere in the country to where it was needed. Then Drew says, when Obama was elected, McConnell said Republicans would oppose everything, and they did. When Biden was elected, McConnell and Republicans said they will oppose everything, and they are. When McConnell was majority leader, he controlled the Senate. As minority leader, McConnell controls the Senate. Mm-hmm. The Senate is a 50-50 tie, even though 40 million more people voted for the Democrats. It's minority rule, pure and simple, by a group that cares only about having power, not to do good, just to say no to the future of the country.
Can I interject a very unpopular opinion here? The United States is a republic. A republic is a democracy in which the rights of the minority are protected, the minority parties. It's the mechanisms we allow to dominate us. And filibuster was a archaic rule to enforce Jim Crow. We could still be a constitutional republic if we got rid of the filibuster, because that thing is really, really not democratic at all.
Again, we can keep talking about this. We liberals love to keep talking about that, and we are right. However, it is not going to even begin to happen until after 2022 and another Democratic landslide.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to turn out.
So just forget it.
Are you saying that there is going to be a Democratic landslide?
No, I'm saying there. If there is not, then we're really doomed. But if there, mm-hmm. that's what it would take in order to bring about changes in filibuster to for Biden to really push through his full agenda is going to require a Senate retain and build a House advantage, and also it's not a real advantage in the. In the Senate at all right now.
What's your prediction, Rosemary?
I think it could go either way. It's way too soon to tell. I think last time, other than Trump, who was repudiated by voters, they said, okay, we'll hold everything the same because we're happy with it. And that's not a good thing. That means we're not picking the right kind of candidates and doing the right kind of campaigning at the local level. So I think a whole lot of work has to be done by Democrats. And so far, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And 2022, I'll quote Jason Johnson, professor of political science at Morgan State University, who's my MSNBC compatriot. He terrified me about 2 weeks ago, and he's absolutely right. He was the first one to make this prediction. Mm. The Republicans fully intend to take back the House in 2022. History's on their side, unless we decide to pull a 2018 on them.
Exactly.
And the first thing that they will do when they take office in January 2023 is they will impeach Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And they've said they would.
Yep. And you look at Joe Manchin. Again, I think he's not wrong about filibuster. I don't think he's voting
as a defensive tool.
Yes, because if they come back in and they have a majority, they would use it in ways that Democrats would have all kinds of angst about using it. So I don't think that Manchin is thinking, oh, this is to protect me and get my. No, I think he's seeing what could happen.
The problem is if we lose the House in 2022, the way America has run since 1783 ends. Then they're not joking about never certifying another election for a Democrat again, ever. And their base expects it. And the way that I've studied the number of threats that their politicians, Republicans, get from their base to kill their families, I really think that they are afraid of their base.
All right.
I think we have to stop reading the news.
Gotta stop reading my books.
I still got to ask Malcolm what the upshot of that is. Let's assume you're right. Let's assume they'll never certify another
election. End of democracy. They'll appoint. You know, somebody made a clever comment the other day. In one of the right-wing Republican, one of these influencers there said, the Speaker of the House can be anybody, and they would appoint Donald Trump to be Speaker of the House, and then they would impeach Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They would come through some clever way to elevate him back to president. These people are deranged. They don't care about America. And for those of you who are out there who say, well, I love Trump more than I love the United States, and you guys are all just a bunch of, flaming liberals pushing propaganda, I literally kept your lives safe from the worst terrorists on this planet. And they tried to take over my capital and kill and execute people inside it. So maybe you should reevaluate your political choices.
So on that topic, and I want to get this to you, Malcolm, before I know you have to leave at 10:30, but the top federal intelligence agencies failed to adequately warn law enforcement officials before the January 6th riot that pro-Trump extremists were threatening violence, including plans to storm the Capitol, infiltrate its tunnel system, and bring guns, according to a new report by two Senate committees that outlines large-scale failures that contributed to the deadly assault. An FBI memo on January 5th warned of people traveling to Washington for quote-unquote war at the Capitol never made its way to top law enforcement officials. The Capitol Police failed to widely circulate information its own intelligence unit had collected as early as mid-December about the threat of violence in January 6th, including a report that said right-wing extremist groups and supporters of President Trump had been posting online and in far-right chat rooms about gathering at the Capitol armed with weapons to pressure lawmakers to overturn his election loss.
You know, people ask me, how do you knock out a 350-page book on this very subject in a matter of months? Because I started it before the election. These tides were coming in. And it started really during the black, you know, the back in 2017 with the alt-right protest at Charlottesville. People think those people went away after we shamed them about Charlottesville. They didn't. The Proud Boys, the militias, the Boogaloo Boys, which is a new manifestation of a bunch of kids that played Call of Duty, then at 18 turned into computer games for real guns to join militias in order to accelerate the collapse of American government so that it would become a white nationalist haven, essentially neo-Nazis. And then all these other disparate militia groups, they all came back together. They consolidated in summer of 2020 in opposition to Black Lives Matter. And they did it under a new banner. Instead of the alt-right, they became the sort of unofficial Trump campaign paramilitary. If it was against Trump, they were there with weapons. When they did these ISIS-like convoys, I call vanilla ISIS convoys, up and down Route 87, going all the way from Albany to, you know, to Yonkers, 20, 30, 50 cars all over the United States. Hey, this was their way of showing that they felt they were above the average American. It wasn't just campaigning for that. So when insurrection came, insurrection is just step one. An insurgency is a political warfare where one group refuses to argue in the halls of power anymore. They take it to the streets. There is an underground happening in the United States right now. It stopped for about 2 weeks after January 6th. But once Biden got inaugurated, the forums that I monitor, I started seeing really seditious talk, you know, that this government has to be ended and ended by force. And they've got guns. They all say, well, we've got the guns to do it. So the failures at the Capitol were ridiculous. I was literally monitoring them in the middle of December. They were calling it the Stop the Steal, Take the Hill, Civil War 2021. They were selling T-shirts on Etsy that said Civil War 2021 and take back or storm the hill. You could literally buy T-shirts for this. They were sharing this stuff everywhere. The only things we're learning right now is that every one of these major militia groups coordinated starting in November 9th, 2020, all of the major groups being led by the Oath Keepers were coordinating attacking the United States Capitol.
Anybody else in the report? Rosemary?
It did not look. The congressional report came out and did not take a look at all at Trump.
Nope.
Did not use the word, except where witnesses or reports use the word insurrection.
Nope.
What does that mean? If there's any other criminal activity in this country, you don't go to the friends and relatives of the perpetrator and say, how are we going to take a look at this? What are the rules? Nope. Why are we doing this? Is there any way that Trump, that senators or congresspeople who worked with the insurrectionists will ever be held to account?
And, you know, there were. You know, based on some of the intelligence that I'm aware of, I know on that day, because I was monitoring the live video feeds of the people attacking. And I remember the first people going to the Western Portico and actually starting to throw the fences at the cops. And I had six people monitoring six different video streams that day. It was really surreal. So there was a Capitol Hill staffer of a Republican congressman who was on top of one of the higher elevations of the roof who was cheering on the attack, you know? And we know that there were at least three congressmen that were part of the organization of the rally, according to Ali Alexander, the on-the-run coordinator of the Stop the Steal rally, that it was Gosar King and one other.
Mo Brooks. So is there any way, Malcolm, other than being in your book, that these guys are going to be held accountable? I mean, I had hope in Merrick Garland, but he's failing.
You've got it. No, well, the Attorney General is an independent entity. You can't just order things. These things have to go through a process, and that process requires an investigation. Yeah, I suspect just right now we're rolling up. We're at 500 people arrested. And we're moving into this sedition phase, and some of the more high level principals. Right now, one guy that has not been arrested, who he predicted he would be arrested 6 weeks ago, was Stuart Rhodes, head of the Oath Keepers. And note to all you people out there, because I know there's Oath Keepers in Columbia County. If you're an Oath Keeper now, you need to get out of that organization. It is going to become, when he's arrested, a criminal enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with the oath to your service. The leader of the Oath Keepers in December said the United States government should declare martial law and seize power. That's the exact opposite of what the Oath Keepers said they formed for.
I want to make just a slight pivot to the story you were talking about regarding Merrick Garland. On Monday, the Justice Department took its most controversial position yet under Attorney General Garland when lawyers for the department confirmed that they will continue to defend Donald Trump in the defamation suit brought by E. Jean Carroll. So what is the argument there?
The argument is that the president, not a particular president, Trump, but the position of president has to be protected from frivolous lawsuits. And so they're going ahead and saying that Trump is right in his declaration that when he defamed her, when he said, she's not my type, I wouldn't have raped someone who looks like her, that this was his duty as a president. It's, in my mind, a ridiculous position. It has nothing to do with the president's duty to speak to the press, to speak to the public. But that's the position right now,
frivolous.
The Department of Justice.
You used the word frivolous, Rosemary. Did you mean that you thought that this was a frivolous accusation on her part?
Oh, no, the opposite. I think that his defense against her is crazy.
I think you were saying that was Garland's reason.
Garland's reason overall is
that presidents need to be protected from frivolous lawsuits. No one's conceding it's a frivolous lawsuit,
no.
But they're saying from a policy standpoint, if it's frivolous, they shouldn't have to be.
So he's taking an absolute position that to protect against the frivolous, we're going to protect you against all lawsuits.
Yeah, except that, and I'm not an expert on government law, but frivolous is a fairly high, for something to be called frivolous, mm-hmm. it has to be really bad. So, mm-hmm. In other words, he's setting a really high standard, saying mm-hmm. if the complaint is this much of a piece of crap, then we have to protect the president.
Right.
But, you know, now that leaves him a lot of room to be able to say, you know, if there's a colorable claim or, mm-hmm. or, you know, something that could survive a motion for summary judgment, then maybe he's set a very low standard is what I'm saying. So I think he's left himself a lot of room.
Yeah, there are some people who think, my sister and I were talking about this yesterday, did he go in to argue this hoping that he would lose, because that would more clearly define when the president is protected and when he's not. Under Trump, Trump took the position that he had absolute immunity, and that was ruinous to the rule of law, I think, in the country. So maybe Garland's arguing that, but that's pretty sophisticated, and he's not talking now.
Yeah. It's always bad to make law on bad facts. You know what I mean? So in other words, if you have a policy that's meant to protect the office of the presidency, mm-hmm. and it's being in some people's, and it's being misused by a bad president, okay, let's say.
Just hypothetically.
Just hypothetically. if that's your position, does that mean that you jettison the policy?
Correct.
For all the other presidents, the answer might be no.
And the other problem is, is it a matter of ex-president as well as present president? I mean, I can get it if it's this president right now, or if it was when Trump was there. They certainly made the argument and it prevailed. They didn't like it, but it did. But now we're reaching back to, ancient times and saying everything he did is defensible by the Justice Department. I don't like that. And I think Garland is wrong.
And here's one other thing about Garland. This is not just one weird, out-of-character decision. It's one in a series that he's made recently. He also supported Trump's going after reporter records and phone calls, something that had been that we just are learning happened under Trump. And the Biden administration was going to continue that policy until there was such huge blowback, and then they backed off. But Merrick Garland was originally for that, too. There's a hope. Certainly, I'm one of those who had it, that once Democrats, once fair-minded people, and Merrick Garland is no progressive, got in, that these Trump-era blows against what seems like constitutional law would go away, and they're not. He's still an institutionalist.
It's funny. Are you starting to rethink that you might have dodged? You're thinking you might have dodged the bullet. With as opposed,
you mean do I want Barr yeah. back? No.
No. I meant for the Supreme Court.
Oh yeah. We're a lot better with the 6-3. No. Oh yeah, we're a lot better with the 6-3 majority. Yeah.
I think Merrick Garland was an excellent, far better choice than Amy Comey Bryant or Kavanaugh or the other one, Gorsuch. Yeah. He is right in the middle. He is such a clear, good thinker. Part of the problem right now is he's not talking. He's not in a position where he says, "This is my thinking." He is not a Bill Barr. He is doing his job. But I don't get it, and the pattern is scary. The third thing, I said there were three. One was the rape case.
I got 10 seconds.
The third one is he wants to still hide the stuff in the Mueller report that Barr kept under wraps.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable.
Boy, I thought it would get easier for me when Malcolm left, and then Rosemary started writing on the personal stuff.
We were in the music break, and Rosemary just asked Rich a very personal question. And
we don't need to repeat it.
No, we will not repeat it. But wow,
I'm really glad I left all my phones in the car.
Yeah, for the record, and you. Shouldn't have answered it, but I'm glad you did. All right.
I'm going to ask you the same question.
You know what? You guys asked me a question earlier about things that listeners send me, I was finally cajoled into answering that question as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, because I had said on this program before that people always ask us, did you fire Rich? Did you get rid of Rich? And we were like, no, we plead with Rich all the time to come. And at one point I said on the air that our listeners weren't very nice to Rich because they were like writing his company and they were writing him at home and different things and were being very mean to him. Not that Rich can't take it, but it didn't seem, exactly the most welcoming thing in the world. And then Rich was telling us that a lot of the listeners that reached out to him were wondering if there was some conspiracy that we had that to get rid of you.
Yeah, and to be, a couple of people, actually, 99.9% of the listeners will reach out, and they're really nice, and they'll say, disagree with everything you have to say, but glad you're there. But during the kind of my hiatus, a lot of people reached out and said, are they not letting you on? And the answer was always no. They're very, very gracious, very welcoming. So I try to.
The first thing
get
I said,
the word out.
The first thing I said to Rich, I said, "You're a lawyer. Let's write up some agreement that you can be with us every week." And he said, "Let's see how today goes." What were you gonna say, Alan? I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, we desperately want a balanced panel, and we really wanted Rich. And it's very disturbing when people think that there's a nefarious reason that somebody's not on. We get it about Malcolm. Malcolm's a very busy man. And when he can come on, he comes on, and he's great, and he does it for nothing, which is really extraordinary. So we love him, and we love having Rich on because it makes a panel what it ought to be.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to move on here, and we'll talk about, well, do you want to talk about China or taxes? Anybody?
China.
Okay. I vote for neither.
All right. Okay. Yeah, let's vote for China. We could talk about anything.
All right. Well,
we could talk about BoJack.
Let's.
Do you watch that?
I've watched one episode. I just started.
Give it time.
I'll get into it.
Senate.
Now with this endorsement, I have to.
By the way, all right, never mind. Senate approves sprawling $250 billion bill to curtail China's economic and military ambitions. The bill, adopted on a bipartisan vote, or bipartisan, invests heavily in U.S. science and technology while threatening a host of punishments against Beijing. The Senate voted to adopt an approximately $250 billion bill to counter China's growing economic and military prowess, hoping that major investments in science and fresh punishments targeting Beijing might give the United States a lasting edge.
I really did want to hear Malcolm's view on that. I wish we had gotten to that when he was here, because I wanted to hear with his background whether he felt that what part of this bill he felt was a deterrent to malfeasance.
Do you see a deterrent in it?
Not in any part that I read, but I don't know that it's. I think the argument would be, the deterrent here is that we are. You don't always have to weaken your competitor; you could strengthen yourself. And I think that's probably the argument that would be made. I'd love to hear it from him. Whether he thinks that's effective against that type of regime or not.
Alan.
I don't know.
Okay. Rosemary?
Well, I'm glad there's a bipartisan bill. Wow. Okay, let's applaud that. One thing that's not clear to me is where do trade agreements come in? That was the Obama approach to cut out China by building a trade agreement that excluded them and build up the partners. And that was done away with. And Trump has so clouded that issue. I don't know where we are. And I don't think this addresses it at all. I don't think there's agreement between the Republicans and the Democrats on that. And I suspect that trade is the real way to deter China. Build up in the South's China Sea is also really scary. And I think militarily, the United States needs to do something about that, working with the Vietnamese and other people, the Japanese, other people who have interests in the China Sea. And I don't think that this bill addresses that very clearly either.
Yeah, it doesn't do very much to China. And by the way, can we just, so that we don't get letters, even though I'm a conservative, I have the intellectual capacity to understand the nuance between the difference between the totalitarian regime in China and the people it oppresses. Mm-hmm. All right. So when I'm talking about the Chinese government. I'm not talking about the Chinese people. I think obviously I was hoping for a lot more. One question with any type of legislation really is this the first step? Have we acknowledged an issue? And is this the first step? In other words, is it now we're comfortable saying they're a competitor? When do we actually start saying in some ways they may be an enemy? Is this one of those things? And Rosemary, you and I have actually agreed on this on other times when sometimes they pass a bill and that's the only thing they do,
right.
and they declare a victory and it just becomes the talking point. If that's what this is, then this is really bad.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. And here's another thing. You talked about the Republicans and Democrats flipping. When Obama was running, he said China's where our focus needs to be. We have to have a Pacific outlook to our foreign policy. And he actually tried to move it that way. Mitt Romney was saying, no, pay attention to Russia. Russia, guys, Russia. I think Mitt Romney was right. And I think that now Republicans have completely flipped. They're denigrating the role of Putin and Russia and want to put emphasis on China, I actually think maybe we should be looking at both. If we had a State Department and a foreign policy that was really bipartisan and transcended one administration over another, we would be looking at both and taking actions to curtail Russia as well as check China.
I agree. I think the people, and again, the Malcolms of the world, I'm not going to speak for, but I think the people who understand intelligence, to a person, I think they would say China has been, you know, the greater threat for many years than almost anyone else.
China's all on potential, Rich. It's on the verge of becoming. Russia's actually doing it now.
No, wait. Okay, really? You don't think China has actually actualized some of that threat? You don't think the lack of I'll say it in the fairest way possible, the lack of transparency.
Oh no, I'm not defending China.
Okay,
No. And I've already talked about the South China Sea, but Putin has actually interfered in our election. What he's doing in the Arctic is really scary to me, and we don't seem to be countering it. He moved into the Middle East in ways that we didn't see any other superpower doing. China doing it? Yeah, in Africa, they have that sewn up. Latin America, there's no questions, but you can't. Why do we have to pick one? We're going to pay attention to China, right. not Russia. Sorry, Alan.
Well, no. For some reason, it seems more politically correct to be able to oppose Russia than to be able to oppose China.
Well, more politically correct if you're a Trumper. If you're not a Trumper, but if you're a Trumper, on the contrary. Now, China, let's talk about that for a moment. Part of the problem is that we rely on China for so much of what we get and so much what we do. Now, you can't both declare them an enemy and say, but we're going to empower you to do our work for us.
Right, but that's going to get worse because of this bill. If this bill is the only thing that we do, what's going to happen is we were always ahead in innovation, right? And we were always ahead in education. And so this bill is going to do a lot more for that. And then what happens is the things that we innovate get manufactured in China, and you have to license that to the state. That's their law. And so unless there's something on the other side of this, we're just going to make more stuff for them to be able to, get the intellectual property rights to.
I remain unconvinced that there's a clear thinking long-term policy on how we deal with what is essentially a change in the world order. China now has to be counted in as a superpower. And has the United States done that? No.
Well, I think you got it. The discussion is the next step. Do you count them as an enemy?
Yeah.
That's a big discussion.
All right. Let's see. We want
Joe, I feel like you lost all interest after Malcolm left.
No, I didn't.
I feel like we're the B
us.
Team here.
I didn't lose. I didn't lose any interest at all. I found it. What? What did I do? Why are you?
Do you want me to read?
No. For those of you listening, what happened was Joe got up and left the room.
He's yawning.
Not true. Not true. All right. All right. I want to, let's see, we have about 2 minutes, and I want to make the most of that. What I was doing was looking into the mailbag, but what I would instead like to do is try to get in the story about the rich, because Rosemary responded about this. But wealthiest executives paid little to nothing in federal income taxes, according to a report. ProPublica, based on their analysis, is based on IRS documents, showed billionaires like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk benefited from tax code loopholes and a focus on taxing income over wealth. The 25 richest Americans, including Bezos, Bloomberg, and Musk, paid relatively little and sometimes nothing in federal income taxes between 2014 and 2018, according to an analysis from the news organization ProPublica that was based on a trove of IRS tax data. How can they get that and they can't get Trump's tax returns?
It's all connected. Look, the K Street boys come and girls come over and they lobby. They lobby, and they have a lot behind them. It's not only that they're making intellectual arguments and lobbying for these great deals for the rich. It's that they have all of the money. And then they give people money, and then they get loopholes and all that into the law. that's the way it is. It doesn't change. It doesn't change under different administrations. And that's why we have this situation, which will always be a story when they bring it up.
Okay, so I love this story because it's a journalism story as well as a politics story. That some source, apparently within the IRS, dumped these records on ProPublica. They claim not to know who he or she was. They don't even know that. They don't know that for sure that it's even IRS. But they dump all these secret records. They make an ethical decision that while they're super secret and these records are supposed to be secret, and no one's committed a crime, by the way. These guys don't have to pay taxes.
Absolutely.
But that is the story,
well,
just
the people,
as Alan
the people
says.
Who stole the tax information committed a crime.
Well, there's a big investigation. Yeah. In fact, the FBI is looking at who dumped it, and they face a jail time. So they they're whistleblowers in the purest sense. They wanted out that our tax system is really messed up, that these people have enough to go into space, but they're not paying their fair
share
of taxes.
All right, last word.
Here we go. But what part of this don't we know that the rich are taken care of in our tax code? Come on.
You did not know that Elon Musk was paying 3.2% taxes. You did not know.
I did.
This is
and I knew GE was paying almost nothing.
Every investigative story in the world ends up with people saying, "Oh, we knew that." You don't know it until it's documented. Now it's documented. This is an important big story.
All true, but I knew it.
All right. Last word. I promised. There you go. Well, my thanks to Rich for being here. Well, thanks to everybody. But Rich, thank you for coming and good to see you.
Great seeing everybody.
Hopefully we can work this out again. Alan, thank you. Thanks to Malcolm and Rosemary. Thank you for being here twice in a row. I really appreciate it. We'll be back right after this.